Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished technology professional from Essex, UK, Mr. Dominic Tyler. Dom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
Dom is the Chief Executive Officer of Junari ERP and Recycly for ITAD businesses. He's the Chair of the Board of Trustees of Mental Health Charity in the Mid and Northeast of Essex Mind. So Dom, before we get into ERP and Recycly, tell me a little bit about your own journey.
Okay, sure. Okay, so to start with, I wasn't very academic at school, and that's a good place to start. I'm not unintelligent, just have always struggled to focus. I think a classic ADHD. So I was never diagnosed with that, but I'd be pretty shocked if I didn't have it. Mm-hmm. And then due to my family circumstances changing, we all moved out to Ankara in Turkey.
Okay.
So out in Ankara, my first job was working in office admin, very basic stuff. And then randomly, I had an opportunity to get qualified as TEFL, teach English as a foreign language.
Okay.
Now, I absolutely loved that. I got to meet such amazing people and improve a lot of the skills I probably lacked in, like communication and teaching. But my biggest takeaway was how excited I get from enabling people. The idea that somebody hasn't got the confidence to do something, but you can see it's inside them. And you know you can tap into it and get the best out of them. And that excitement they have when they realize that's true as well. And I think that paved the way for me wanting a leadership career when you can spot that potential in people. So after that, I came back to the UK, again, did another basic admin job for a little bit of time. And then I got a job in sales at a software company. Mm-hmm. Quite an unusual path because I realized that there was no system to support my job. So I picked up Microsoft Access and started creating my own system to manage all the CRM and the sales and the purchase. I'd never done software development before. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was paid a fairly low wage as a salesperson. I was a young guy. And the software development team spotted me. And just to shorten the conversation, it was, would you like double salary to work as a software developer?
Okay.
That was quite an easy answer. So I did that. I did that for a while. Fast forward about 15 years, and I was managing director of that business.
Amazing.
And I found that I preferred the commercial stuff really to the technical stuff. I kind of like the coding because of the challenge, but people, there's so many more gray areas in people. So that's what I enjoyed.
Amazing.
Whilst I was doing that, we did a project for our Mind Association. So Mind is a network of mental health charities in the UK. Mm-hmm. And that they asked me in one evening, very unusual. I wasn't sure what was going on. And then they said, would you like to join the board? And then literally the next meeting, they made me chair. Mm. And my approach was very, very business focused rather than charity focused. Mm. So it's quite a challenge. But then my angle was very much, if we can run like a business, we're sustainable. And by being profitable, we can offer more services to more people. So try and see it my way. I think they saw me as a bit capitalist when I went in, which wasn't my approach. But that gave me some skills and diplomacy in running a bigger business. And I had to resign from that role when I bought Junari. I was having my second child at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was just buying Junari, and there was just so much going on, so I resigned. So when I bought Junari, that it had one developer and old technology, and the business owner just kind of wanted to get out, really. It had enough. And to me, that's the perfect challenge. You know the excitement when you're at the bottom of a hill, and you know the joy of the journey ahead, and you know that the view up the top is going to be so sweet because you put all the effort into climbing it. Well, that's the journey we've been on, and I absolutely love it. And then finally, the whole idea of me buying Junari, which is a bespoke software business, was to spot an industry-specific opportunity. I think that's the panacea for most bespoke software businesses, is to spot something they can create and actually change an industry and resell it. So there you go. That's the story.
Amazing. And as they say, the rest is history. So fantastic. So Dom, let's talk about Junari. Tell me a little bit about the kind of work you're doing at Junari and what is your approach to designing and developing ERP software?
Okay. So when I first bought it, the first challenge was to kind of fix the processes, make it run like a business rather than a kind of boutique outfit. and then change the technology to be modern, and then recruit people and start building a team and business and processes around that. After a few years, we started to realize where our natural leaning was and where the opportunities were, and that was manufacturing. So that's where we started to focus our efforts. You can't spread yourself too thin, of course. So the approach we take is, once we have confirmation of a project, we run what's called a business analysis session. So that's usually on site, and that's me. And I go there with these, like you can see these, like these static whiteboards.
Yeah.
I take them out, I plaster them all over the walls, take a load of marker pens, and I ask them every question. And it's this technique that I learned from Reddit. I'm sure you're familiar with Reddit. There's a great community on Reddit called Eli5. Explain like I'm five. Now, my youngest is five, so I have a lot of practice with this. And I think if you can explain a very complicated concept to a five-year-old, you've really grasped it. So I use that principle when I'm asking questions. So everything, when somebody refers to a customer or a supplier, what is a supplier to you? All right, so you're part of a distribution network. So that's something different to another supplier. We can't take that for granted. So because of my ADHD nature, I'm very good at top level, not so good at detail. So I map out the top level of the business. Now, after that, we take that information and we run it in what's called monthly sprints. So we use agile methodologies.
Okay.
So each sprint is then just a finite amount of work that we work on for 1 month. So at the end of each month, the customer has 1 month's worth of work to use. So that means we work very closely with the customer and ensures they get exactly what they want.
Fascinating. And as you have been developing Junari and ERP, what have been some of your challenges?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the biggest one has been challenging how businesses work, especially when they're very established and the business owner is very experienced and they do know what they're doing, but we've seen different ways of working. I've had the good fortune of walking into hundreds of businesses and learning the best practice from many of them. And I can kind of assemble that and put it into new solutions for a business. So I mean, a common request, I'm simplifying it for this interview, is to kind of computerize what they're already doing.
Okay.
Now, to me, that's a bit of a waste of time, really. Sure, we can take the pieces of paper, we can take the whiteboard on the wall, and we can stick that into, you know, a computer system. But what's the point of that? This is an opportunity to pull on all the years, the decades of business experience that my colleagues and I have, and will change how you work. I think most software developers would agree that the biggest challenge is in architecting something really, really simple.
Correct.
And it's then about the change management. So how do we, so once the managing director, the CEO has agreed, he's still got to convince his staff. The people are running their own departments in their ways. We have to engage with them and really explain. So we end up reading between the lines. So instead of what do you want us to do, we are really asking what are you trying to achieve? And then we help them solve that problem. And we give them ideas for them to work on, and then we can solve it in the best possible way.
Fascinating. The other question that is always asked when it comes to ERP is, how do you make it user-friendly and intuitive for your end users? Because I've seen this many times in an ERP implementation in my own career. It's so technical that your IT manager understands everything, but as a user, you don't.
Yes, another great question. So one of the advantages we have is that we build everything upon Odoo, which is a global ERP system. And a great feature of Odoo is how every area of the system is similar to every other area. There's only so many types of screens you can have in a piece of business software, typically. You have lists and details, and that's kind of relatively, that covers it all. So once familiarity has been gained in one area, the user feels familiar with everything. Aside from that, obviously, because we're working so closely with the customer and they're getting a release every month, we get feedback instantly. So in that second sprint, we're making any changes that came out from the testing from the first sprint. So they're never left with a system that they don't understand and they can't use.
Amazing. The other question that I had for you was that, how do you stay current with some of the latest trends and advancements that are happening in ERP? And everything seems to be changing every day. And now the biggest hot property is ChatGPT.
Well, we can come on to the AI aspects shortly. But Well, I mean, we are obsessed, really. We are obsessed with ERP. I'm personally following, you know, every ERP-related hashtag on every social platform you can imagine, and obsessively reading all the articles from competition and other platforms. But aside from that, to be a salesperson, which is my main role, I have to understand the competition very well. Mm. If somebody's already got, you know, XYZ system, to be able to extol the benefits of Odoo, I have to understand what they're using really well and correct. Weigh that up for them. So I would say we're obsessed. So we're constantly on the forefront of things because we want to be.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And for my viewers and listeners, can you give me an example of a complex implementation that you have worked on, and how have you navigated any challenges, if any?
Okay, well, I've got a couple of examples for that, actually. So we're almost finished with a project for a network hardware reseller. They've got such a unique and clever way of working. Mm. So the complicated bit was making that simple. Mm. Because their processes were very complex because they're so unique. So without going into too much detail, because yeah. I think there's probably some IP around this, absolutely. We came up with a very unique way to map products to the attributes of those products and mm. to make it very simple for the end users and everybody in the distribution chain to be able to navigate and select exactly the right combination of projects so there was no liabilities on the supplier. I can't go into any more detail than that.
No, so you don't need anything else.
But the other challenging project has been, we have been working for a very large gaming PC supplier. Mm. And they sell via eBay, Amazon, and other platforms. Now, the inbuilt integrations with Odoo weren't sufficient for what they needed. So we had a very interesting and challenging piece of work to go and find third-party integrations, but then you're relying on a third-party supplier. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the technology, it's the relationship, it's the support, and it becomes a three-way, potentially four-way relationship with Odoo, third-party supplier, the customer, and us. Mm-hmm. Very complicated. I'm very lucky to have such a competent team to manage these things, actually.
Wonderful. Two more questions relating to Junari, and then we move to Recycly. How do you approach customer feedback, incorporating customer feedback into, you know, whatever development that you're doing?
Well, aside from regular review and retro meetings that we have, which are our continuous improvement cycle, we achieve what you've just said via our agile process because we're working so closely with the customer on a regular cycle mm. rather than the conventional way of working is known as waterfall. And that's mm. where you spend months gathering requirements, write a very complicated specification document mm. that nobody can quite grasp. And then you disappear for 12 months and come back with the system, which inevitably is not going to be what the customer wants because they can't right. envisage, they can't see 12 months forward.
Absolutely.
But by working on that monthly basis, we're capturing risks and issues. We're logging any assumptions so the customer mm. can challenge that. So we'll make an assumption, for example, all of your users will have Android or iPhones.
Mm.
So we give the customer an opportunity to say, well, actually, they don't. We've got some users on this and they need to be involved. Mm. So by logging all of the risks, all of the issues, all of the assumptions, a la standard project management, really, we are making sure that their feedback is incorporated on a very regular basis. So we never fall behind.
Mm. Wonderful. And my last question relating to Junari, and which I just asked you, how will these new artificial intelligence technologies impact ERP development?
That is a massive topic, isn't it? Even before ChatGPT, we had so many ideas. I mean, ChatGPT obviously took the world by storm. I mean, correct. Bill Gates has said it's the second revolution in his lifetime.
Correct.
Some of the obvious ideas around automated marketing, communications, task and calendar management. But we think that some of the most revolutionary benefits will be like the insights that AI can provide once it's accessed an entire database behind an ERP system and has context on everything. I mean, ChatGPT already has been trained on the internet, which is obviously phenomenal, unthinkable, unfathomable.
Yeah.
But imagine that plus being trained on your data. So business intelligence right now, which is the art of asking the right questions and reporting on that data to make useful decisions, that is a science and an art.
Mm.
You have to have the art of asking the right questions and then the science of implementing that. And because it's such an iterative process,
correct.
you need individuals with both skill sets or an exceptionally good team that works close together. Mm. But with AI, I mean, the sort of visions we've had are imagine a dashboard that you log into in management. And every department, marketing, sales, production, has got five random insights that the AI has picked out. They have to be random. And against each one, you can thumbs up or thumbs down. And AI over time learns what's important to you and improves. I mean, the stuff that AI, that AI is going to give us is going to be so insightful.
I agree. I've been experimenting with ChatGPT for the last 3 months, and it's just incredible. But moving on, Dom, now, and when I was reading about you, fascinating to you to have two completely different businesses. One is an ERP, and the other is IT asset disposition, recycling. What made you get into a physical, you know, asset disposition business?
So, as I said, when I bought Gennaro, the whole idea was to look for a vertical market, look for an industry-specific product we could create and resell and become specialists and really add value and change. Actually, sounds cliche, but actually change an industry for the better. One of our projects was from an ITAD business. And the first thing you think when you've got somebody who's prepared to pay a lot of money for a bespoke system is, now, why haven't they got something off the shelf? Is the pricing wrong? Is the advertising wrong? Are the features wrong? There must be a reason you've come to us. So it's at least worth putting some time into doing some market research. You know, why would they want to speak to us? So we found ITAD was an underserved industry. There are obviously solutions in that space, but we didn't feel like they were as good as they could be. So part of the deal I made with this business was to give them a discount for the initial work in return for me retaining the intellectual property. And the business owner was very happy to do that and wanted me to take this further. Fast forward 2 years, and we have an amazing product that we're about to hard launch.
Amazing, amazing. And how serious is the problem of IT asset disposition in the world?
It's very serious. It's the fastest growing waste stream in the world. I think they estimate around 50 million tons of e-waste is produced annually. And not only that, it's toxic. It can lead to health risks. Ooh. Now, if we can actually make a difference to that industry and reduce that even by, you know, 10%, that would make a giant difference to the health of so many people. It's such an inspiring mission. We love it.
Correct. I agree. My next question is that what steps should be ensured to ensure secure disposal?
Well, the main issue is about the data, really. For the businesses involved, it's about the data. And that's to do with the data destruction. And when that's not possible, obviously there's physical destruction. They literally have machines that stamp the hard drives and ruin them so they're not usable. And there's different levels of data destruction. But ideally, there won't be any physical destruction, because the reuse of e-waste, that is what can reduce the 50 million tons that's increasing every year. Wow. So we're trying to encourage that. And the industry is built around refurbishment. But when it's not economically viable, the ITAD businesses don't have much incentive to refurbish and resell.
And when you look at IT disposal or disposition, how does one determine the value of such assets?
ITAD businesses themselves use a variety of valuation methods. So a good example is laptops. So they start with a processor and a screen size, and then they have a point system where they reduce based on aesthetic and physical damage and certain fixed reductions, for example, if the AC adapter is missing. And this also affects how much revenue the customer gets. So they often, most of the time, the customer will get a revenue share of the actual sales, which is defined in the contract. So there's incentive for the customer and the ITAD business themselves to kind of not just preserve the hardware, but to maximize the value of it. So they're really interested in their remarketing operation as well.
And there's another aspect that I was thinking about, that with all these electronic vehicles or electrical vehicles that are coming in, there is a whole new category of EV batteries. Would that also be classified as ITAD, or will it be something separate?
That wouldn't be classified as ITAD, because that's specifically IT asset disposal. But ITAD itself, I think, only makes up around a fifth of the e-waste category itself. I mean, mobile phones is another one. But as you just said, obviously, EV batteries is a growing concern. I think they are looking at ways of reusing those, recharging them, but that's very challenging.
And what about you know, data destruction and the method used to ensure that data is unrecoverable? How do you handle that kind of thing?
Well, as I said, I mean, the physical destruction is almost a last resort, really, because it destroys the hardware, and then it has to end up either potentially part of it can be harvested, but most of the time it ends up getting dumped, unfortunately, which is very sad. But the software now for destroying data on hard drives is incredibly advanced, military grade, and makes the data as unrecoverable as it is imaginable. It would cost far too much to recover this data or even try. And it's so little remnants of it now that it wouldn't be worth it.
So I have time for two more questions, Dom. My next question is that how does one ensure that the IT asset disposition process is compliant with all relevant laws and regulations?
Well, there's pressure on ITAD businesses to make sure there are a certain level of compliance, especially if they want to win bigger business. And bigger businesses where there's confidential data involved, military, schools, hospitals, etc. I mean, in the UK, we've got ISO 27001. That's a global accreditation, but it's very, very, very recognized in the UK and ITAD. And that talks about information security management, secure destruction of data, management of information risks. ADISA is a unique membership organization. And they provide a certification specifically for ITAD. And then, of course, they need the Environment Agency Waste Carrier License. Same for all UK businesses. In the US, it's actually completely different. They've got R2, which is ITAD specific for environmental responsibility and data security. They've got National Association for Information Destruction Certification, which is security controls to protect confidential information. Very important, for example, to military. There are also others, but these are the main ones. And also every single time a hard drive or any storage device is destroyed, a certificate of destruction has to be created and issued to that customer as their assurance. So as I said, most big customers, especially with confidential, absolutely need this reassurance, and they won't go with an ITAD business unless they have this.
Fascinating. And my last question to you, Dom, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your own amazing journey, and as you were telling me from Ankara, you know, to now owning businesses, what would you say are three lessons you would want our viewers and listeners to take away from your journey and from our conversation?
That's another good question. Thanks, Ash. I would say balancing short-term and long-term goals very carefully is incredibly important. I mean, Jannari, short-term, it had to generate some revenue to be able to build, but long-term, my vision was always to find an industry-specific product. And holding that mission, just holding to it, however many times you're knocked off, a bit like they're using the sailing a ship analogy, you're going to head for that island, whatever happens, but you're going to be swept off 50 times. It won't be the straight line you hope it is, and understand that. That's the first thing. The second thing is read lots of books, or in my case, because I'm not great at reading because of my ADHD, listen to lots of them. I have so many of my best decisions have been driven by the hundreds of audiobooks that I've enjoyed. There's just so much curated. I mean, an entire lifetime of wisdom can be boiled down to 9 or 10 hours of the best bits. That's incredible.
I agree.
And then finally, I wanted to make a note of Ikigai. I don't know if you've heard of Ikigai.
I have.
Yes. I think everybody should do an Ikigai. I think without that, what are people doing? You have to have that. You have to have your mission. Our motivation for recycling hasn't wavered for years. We're so passionate about it. It ticks every single box. People want it. It's saving the planet. It's generating revenue so we can spend more time on it. It's a needed thing. It's such a great mission.
Absolutely. And on that note, Dom, and your three amazing lessons, balance short-term and long-term goals, that is very critical. Second, I just love that, which is read lots of books. And the third one is find your Ikigai. I think that is so important as well. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your journey. Thank you for talking to me about Jannari ERP and all the work that you are doing. I also loved your Eli 5. Explain it like I was 5. I think I'd heard it, but I didn't hear it explained so well as you explained it to me. Thank you also for speaking to me about Recycly and IT asset disposition. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.